We're speaking now with our Idaho District 1 State Senator, the incumbent, Jim Woodward. Jim, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, let's start out with an introduction to the voters. Tell us a bit about your background and how long you've been in Bonner County, or Bonner and Boundary Counties in your case, and a bit about yourself.
Okay, thank you, Chris. The short summary of my life is that I'm an Idahoan by upbringing, Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry, an engineer by education at the University of Idaho, a mechanical engineering degree, a naval submarine officer by training. I was served on the USS Alabama with, we had a nuclear power plant and nuclear weapons on board, and then finished out a career after my active time, finished out that career in reserve, so for a total of 21 years. And then finally, I'm a small business owner by the School of Hard Knocks. I have a construction business here in Sandpoint, and we do excavation projects and build docks on the lake. Also active in the community, serve on the Sagal Fire Board, which is a member of the Selkirk Fire Joint Powers Agreement, so I'm on both those boards, and I also serve on the Northern Lights Board.
Okay. So you said by upbringing, how many years you've been living here?
Well, I've been here essentially all of my life. My parents were over north of Seattle when I was born, but we were back home by the time before I can remember. And so I grew up on Pine Street a little bit, and then we moved to Bonner's Ferry. So I grew up, been here all my life, other than my Navy time and time out of town for education.
Mm-hmm. And what is your educational background?
At the University of Idaho, engineering degree at the University of Idaho.
Okay, family, kids, anything you want to mention there?
Yes, I have two children, and one's grown and works for me, and then the other one is a sophomore in high school. And so we're the standard family with almost 2.3 children and a couple of dogs, and my wife has a lot of ducks.
Ducks, yeah. Duck eggs. Those are pretty good, I hear.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, I've had some. They're good. Well, I ask all the candidates this. Of course, you're the incumbent, but why are you running for re-election?
Well, at this point, I feel like the community has invested in me. The cycle down there for a legislator is to come in and spend some time learning and meeting people, developing those relationships in Boise so that you can effectively represent the community. And I'm partway into that. In 4 years in right now, I've served two terms. The terms are both 2 years long, and so I was elected in 2018, served a term and then a second term, and we're still working away at in education. I started out at the beginning and said we need to shift the burden or the funding of the education system in Idaho, the K-12 public education system, get that back on the state budget and help move it away from the property tax system, and so that to make that more equitable for folks and to provide a more stable source. And we know that the supplemental levies that we're using right now are hard on the community and hard on the school systems that have to run a campaign every couple of years just to have enough money to be able to operate the schools in the manner that they should.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think actually the number is north of 80% of the school districts run supplemental levies. So it's, well, actually circle back around to that, I think, in a few minutes here. But another question I'm trying to ask all the candidates is, the legislature is typically in session from January to March or sometimes April. That can vary. But you're representing your constituents year-round, so how much time can you devote to the office? In your case, is how much time do you end up devoting to the office?
The legislative session is full time when we're down there. The typical day, I come in the Capitol at 7 in the morning, usually done around 9 in the evening. And that's the 3 months, January, February, March. And I just come home and I work Saturdays. I get the paperwork caught up with the business. Outside the legislative session, I've actually been surprised. I end up spending probably on the typical week as much as half of my week on legislative duties. That's meetings, taking care of constituent issues, just putting people in contact with the right agency or with the federal delegation. If somebody needs to get a hold of Senator Risch or his staff and take care of something that's really a federal issue. it takes a fair amount of time, but happy to do it. And I'm fortunate that I have a great crew of guys who work for me in the construction company, and they've taken on a lot more, and they've learned, and I've learned how much that they're capable of.
And they're covering for you.
They are.
I'm curious, how much do you hear from constituents because they have some issue with something?
I don't know how to quantify it, but I have a lot of different conversations. Mm-hmm. We talk about everything that's a role of state government, the Department of Labor, Department of Commerce, the education system, transportation system, all of those come into play. And to go back to the question a minute ago about what else do I want to do, we need to grow our transportation system and make sure it's properly maintained. And so those are two of the roles that education I talked about and transportation, two really primary roles of state government. And so those are the things that I'm vested in to my time in Boise. I serve on the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee, and I also am on the Education Committee, and then I'm Vice Chairman of the Transportation Committee. Mm-hmm. So I'm positioned right now to within the Finance Committee to provide the funding, and then in Education and Transportation Committees to work on the policy side of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that probably segues right into my main question for the whole interview here is, what do you consider the biggest issues in the Senate race that you would like the voters to weigh out as they decide who they're going to vote for?
Well, the biggest issues for the state, and I think what the person needs to work on as a state senator around Idaho and in North Idaho in particular, the growth that we're dealing with is really a challenge. And then our growth combined with some of the hints of an economy that's, you know, more than hints even at this point, but the inflation rate, and we're dealing with a very tight labor market, and part of that is the growth here has caused those residential house prices, the residential prices on real estate to go so high, and then inflation and labor shortage and growth, it really is making a challenging situation here in Sandpoint. When you see restaurants that can't stay open all week because they don't have enough people, and so how do we address that? Well, the labor shortage is partly a function of a demographic shift, really, as the baby boomers are coming out of the workforce. That's harder to change, but somehow we need to make sure that we can still have everybody in the community. And so that, for me, I consider myself a traditional conservative Republican. It's not a role of the state government to provide workforce housing, but instead to provide the business environment so that private enterprise can do that. I always say that a decision made through government is mandatory, but private enterprise, you have the choice to join and participate or not, and I think that's important. And private enterprise is much more flexible and responsive, will meet the needs of the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of the whole basis of the capitalist system, is that supply and demand, when there's demand, the supply increases to meet it. But as you mentioned, we're in a really tough situation for housing, especially for workforce employees.
We are, and we saw that response this year, though. If you look at the labor rates or the pay scale around the town, it's changed dramatically. When you look at just, you can drive past a fast food restaurant and see what starting wage is, yeah, when it's posted on the board, and they're trying to bring people in, and the market does respond.
Mm-hmm. Okay, growth, big issue, and it's multi-layered actually, but are there other issues that you would identify?
Well, to some of the growth that we see, or one of the challenges from that growth is the amount of traffic on the highway. And so we're going to get that project this summer at the end of the south end of the Long Bridge to help out with the traffic there. That was something that I initiated about 2 years ago. Representative Dixon and I both worked on that with the transportation department, and so we'll have that's one little piece of the pie there. But the whole corridor south of the Long Bridge, clear back to where the four lane is being worked on now at Granite Hill, that capacity will have to be increased. So transportation system, which is a function of state government, is a big piece of helping out with this growth.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people joke about it, but we can't put up a gate at the south end of the Long Ridge.
Yeah, that would really create a traffic problem. Okay, I do have a few questions on various issues, but anything else that you want to mention is top of mind is an issue for you?
Well, working with the budget this year, I just mentioned what I think that we did. We saw record growth in the revenues of the state. The revenues of the state are sales tax and income tax primarily. And so we had more money than normal. And we went after that. The governor proposes a budget, and the legislature goes through it piece by piece and approves it. And that balanced approach that we took this year, I say, is a display or an example of the thoughtful decisions we make in looking at the long term of Idaho. And with that almost a $2 billion surplus this year, we made investments in education, record investments, about $300 million new money in the Idaho K-12 education system. Record investments in transportation. We'll see some of that here, a $200 million package for rural bridges throughout Idaho, and we'll start to work on some of the bridges around the area off of the Highway 95 system, but ones that we use and are starting to age out. In addition to that, we're going to have a grant program through the Department of Environmental Quality to help some of the smaller sewer and water systems come up to standards that are in place now. Oftentimes with a small rural water or sewer system, it's very difficult to try and pay for a big project to meet a standard for clean water or for effluent from a sewer system. When you just have 30 or 50 or 100 people on that system, how do you spread that cost? And the Department of Environmental Quality is putting out a program with the money that we authorized for these small systems to be able to make those improvements. Mm-hmm. So that's another investment, long-term investment. And then finally, I said investments in education, transportation, infrastructure. We also returned money to the taxpayer this year, being mindful of everybody's wallet. That's at both a tax cut and a tax rebate. So Idaho's income tax rate is down to 6% now, and that was 7.4% not that many years ago. This year, the reduction was from 6.5% to 6%. So an income tax cut going on into the future, but also a rebate this year to return some of that money. So whatever your 2020 Idaho income tax bill was, you'll receive 12% of that back in the mail in a check. And then finally, the last part of that was putting some more money in rainy day savings to prepare when we see the signs of a potential economic times that are not as quite as bright. And so we have a budget stabilization fund along with a public education stabilization fund, and we have all those back up at levels or slightly higher than the levels we saw prior to the 2008 recession.
Mm-hmm.
So we're ready to weather a storm if necessary.
Will the revenues this year, because as you mentioned, we saw higher revenues from sales tax and income tax receipts because the economy revived, plus the pandemic played a big role in that, I think. Are the projections adjusted up now to allow for that?
Well, we did increase the economic, what we call the economic outlook or the budget projection, because to balance the budget, we go and say, how much do we think is coming in next year? And then we have a budget to that. I am on that committee. I go down before the legislative session. It's called the Economic Outlook and Revenue Assessment Committee, and we listen to economists and business owners and a whole variety of folks come in and then try and make that budget. And yes, we adjusted those upward, but we make that decision as a committee. That committee makes a recommendation to the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee, and then we vote in JFAC and decide what that is. So the revenue projections are up higher. And we are still motoring right along with great revenue at the state level. Mm-hmm. You know, I just saw an update yesterday, and the fiscal year 22 ends at the end of June. Will be more than we thought. That there will be more money than we thought. The question becomes, where is that money coming from? And if it's coming from increased economic activity and because of more people moving here, then the appropriate answer is put that money back in to the state in to make sure that the infrastructure is in place for everybody. Mm-hmm. We don't want to, we have cut income tax quite a bit. I get hesitant at some point to cut more because there's more money coming in. Is that deficit spending because we haven't put in place the things we should be putting in place to keep up with the new people moving here?
Mm-hmm. Well, part of the budget surplus, I believe, was derived from the fact that there was more federal revenues coming in, specifically, I think, from the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA.
Those monies are separate from the budget, the general fund budget dollars that we talk about. So when we talk about the surplus, those are general fund dollars, mm-hmm. which are just income tax and sales tax. Mm-hmm. And then aside from that, some of these investments that I spoke of, the sewer and water upgrades, the bridges, that is ARPA money.
Okay. What do you think the state's role is in accepting that money? Because it has been called into question by some of the legislators.
Well, that money is Idaho taxpayer dollars, and so Idaho is a part of the United States of America, and we have a federal system where some of our tax dollars go to D.C. and come back out over the states. Some of our dollars go to Boise and come back out over the state, and then we have a local tax level where we pay in at the county level or a city level and then have the services coming back. And so there's been a lot of debate this year. People talk about the potential for strings being attached to those dollars. I think that I still have faith in the institution. It's not everything is the way I would like it to be, but we have a federal delegation and we can weigh in at the federal level on any problems we see. But the Idaho taxpayer dollars that are coming back from the federal government, we can put those to use, I think, in the way we have. And I say the way we have because we know that that federal money, the federal government is operating in a deficit, and so we are accumulating more debt at the federal level. And that's why it's been so important that all of this money that the federal money that's coming in that is deficit spending, we're putting it into bridges or sewer or water, anything we can invest that in that benefits people for the decades to come, because they're going to be the ones paying for that at some point. So.
And there is a backlog of aging bridges and in infrastructure.
Definitely there is. We built a lot of bridges in this country after World War II. All of those bridges are now 50 to 70 years old. It's time to get, and that's the typical design life for a bridge, and so it's time to get back out and rework some of those bridges.
Yeah, don't want bridges collapsing.
No.
Okay, so just to reiterate, there was a $600 million income tax cut and rebate package, and you supported that. That was a plan, I think, put forward by the governor, right?
Yes, that's correct. That $600 million package, that was the combination of some of that is an ongoing tax cut, and then another portion of it, the one-time, the rebate.
Yeah. There's also an infrastructure investment, a $252 million infrastructure package. Mm-hmm. That you supported,
I was the bill sponsor on that. Yeah. So I carried that bill in the Senate. So $200 million for rural bridges, $10 million for pedestrian safety improvements around the state, $6.4 million in that for airport improvements. There's small rural airports like Sandpoint and Bonners Ferry. There was another $10 million for railroad safety, railroad crossing safety. Mm-hmm. So a number of different pieces in that package.
Okay, you touched on it earlier, but let's talk a little bit more about education funding. One of the things that was included in the, I believe, $300 million that was put aside for education was all-day kindergarten. Elective for the parents, they can put their kids into all-day kindergarten if they choose to. Did you favor or oppose that? And overall, why don't you speak to, you already have spoken to it a little bit, but speak to what you see as the state's role in education funding.
You bet. So there was about $300 million of new ongoing money put into the K-12 education system this year. $105 million of that is additional money to provide to the school districts for health insurance for the employees, to put those education employees at the same level of reimbursement healthcare funding as the state employees. So that $105 million is spread out over about 115,000 employees across the state. The $46 million of new money being put into the literacy program is in addition to the $26 million that's already in that budget for literacy. And there's a flexibility in that literacy program so that that money can be used by a school district to offer optional full-day kindergarten. And we, I believe we'll see a lot of different, and we are seeing the school districts take advantage of that. There was the next level of the teacher career ladder funding was included in that money this year. So a number of great improvements to the K-12 funding, which then, as that funding comes from the state, the school districts have the ability then to not go out to supplemental levy because they're receiving enough money.
Lessen the burden on those property taxpayers.
Right.
Well, let's touch on that a little bit. One area where property owners here and around the entire state are feeling the effects of growth is the escalation in property values and the increase in taxes that that brings with them. Do you see a potential fix for the property tax situation where some folks are, especially those elderly folks that are on fixed incomes, are finding the taxes very problematic to even to take care of?
We've had tax bills in the last two sessions in regards to property tax. We fixed one piece of the previous years. This year we fixed a piece for the circuit breaker tax. So to make sure that more people are eligible, because there was a limitation put on the circuit breaker program based on the value of someone's home. We did get that increased, and so that brought a lot of people back to where they can use the circuit breaker program. But the property tax system in Idaho does not work well during ups and downs. I've seen about 100-year history. Every time that the economy is strong, property taxes on residences, on homes, climbs fast as there's demand for homes. And so we have a long history of trying to battle this problem. The 2006 solution was to raise sales tax by a penny and then take the school maintenance and operation levy off. And that was what put us in the situation, though, where we have so many schools on supplemental levies when the M&O line item was taken away. But what one simple piece that we can start out with, and I'm always an advocate of one bite at a time, not changing, not try to revamp the whole system. It just is too painful over the whole state with the number of people. But one easy fix is to time average the value of your home. And so if right now we've been in a long upward trend of house prices. We in 2009 we saw quite a bit of downward pricing, and so if we were to average the value of your house over time, that would help with these the peaks and valleys.
Cool down these hot periods that
That's exactly
have.
Right. If you were looking at the value of your house over the past 5 years or 7 years instead of just this year, we do that in a different category of real estate. And we have four categories of real estate for property taxation. It's residential, commercial, ag, and timber. And so when the economy runs strong like it is right now, all the house prices go up, but they go up faster than the other categories. And then so the property tax burden shifts to the residential property. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to fix that. But we have a constitutional requirement that we treat and tax all categories of real estate the same. And so we have to figure out a system, either change the Constitution or figure out some way to try and not let the shift from one category into another happen.
Mm-hmm. We're just about running out of time, but do you see that as an issue that the legislature will deal with in the next term, the next couple of years?
Well, we'll definitely be talking about it again. It's a little bit harder to predict. We had the redistricting based on the 2020 census, and so the turnover in the legislature this time is very large. In the Senate, we have 35 members, guaranteed 15 new faces in the Senate before any contested races. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a fresh start. The House tax chairman is retiring, tax committee chair. The Senate tax committee chair is in a contested election with another incumbent because the lines were redrawn and two incumbent senators ended up in the same district. So
it's an interesting year.
It's a new day in tax policy as well as others.
Well, Senator Jim Woodward, we're just about out of time. I just have a couple more things. I'm asking all the candidates, what differentiates you as a candidate? Why should people vote for you?
Oh, I think that in my time here, I represent the community. I know what people are interested in. And so being a business owner, I understand that portion of living here and making a living, along with the other background, my education, my military time that I told you about. My military time really provides me an understanding of the government structure and how to go and be effective in Boise. So I think that's why I always start out with that combination of those four items, is that I think it provides the pieces for me to operate effectively in Boise.
So people weighing how to cast their vote, how do they find out more about you?
My website is Jim Woodward for Senate, so jimwoodwardforsenate.org. That's the best way. I have my cell phone number on there. I have my cell phone number everywhere. I am happy to have conversations at any time. That's I like to talk to people and have the opportunity to express what is real and what are claims.
Jim Woodward, our incumbent state senator for District 1, Republican, I want to say thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you, Chris.